Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Alternate Routes early and ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Kevin, who is that right now breathing down Tom Brady's neck? Is it Ben Affleck, Matt Damon? No. It's the future GOAT, number 15, Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes has now matched TB12's early career success, ring for ring, Super Bowl MVP for Super Bowl MVP, and now he is rocketing up everybody's GOAT charts.
Listen, Trey, I think you're right, but in 2024, for the first time, Patrick is going to have to deal with real competition, something Tom never had to worry about, and it's right in his division. Jim Harbaugh, meet Justin Herbert. The AFC West, it ain't a cakewalk no more.
You want to talk about a cakewalk? The Patriots in the AFC East all those years, 18 seasons that Brady started for New England, they won it 17 times, 11 years in a row, still the NFL record. But what if Brady had to go through another Hall of Fame quarterback in his own division?
And it almost happened. Back in 2006, Drew Brees wanted to go to Miami as a free agent. But Brees failed the Dolphins' physical because of a bad shoulder. He went to New Orleans, became a folk hero, had a Hall of Fame career, won the city a Super Bowl. Meanwhile, the Dolphins, they had that messy divorce a year later with their head coach Nick Saban. That Nick Saban, yes. But what would have happened if Brees became a Dolphin? Does Tom Brady ever become the GOAT?
Does the Tide ever become the center of the SEC and college football universe?
And what does that have to do with a current U.S. senator? From Wondery, I'm Kevin Frazier.
Man, you do this to me every show. I'm in, and I'm Trey Wingo, and this is Alternate Routes. That's a butterfly effect. Yeah, nothing left to say, I gotta make it happen. What you about to see next is a chain reaction. Shoulda, coulda, woulda, never see the action. Let's keep it real. That's a butterfly effect for
real. This episode is brought to you by Noom. Forget one-size-fits-all diets. With Noom, you get a personalized weight loss plan that's tailored to your lifestyle. No food is off-limits. Enjoy your favorites while discovering healthier habits. Noom's users love the flexible approach, blending psychology and biology to help you lose weight in a way that's sustainable for you. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Bite.
So here's how the show is going to work. Each week, we'll bust open the sliding doors of a different what-if iconic sports moment.
Then we'll follow every single ripple effect and play out all the woulda, coulda, shoulda scenarios. Today's big question, what if Drew Brees joined the Dolphins?
And just real quickly, Drew Brees was drafted in the second round by the then San Diego Chargers. A couple years later, they drafted Phillip Rivers. So he was playing in a last game of the regular season, fumbled near the goal line, went in to extend his arm to get the ball back, and a defensive player crunched his shoulder.
I think Drew Brees got hurt on that play, going for that fumble.
Well, that arm gets hyperextended in a very scary position.
His shoulder became an absolute mess. And that's why he decided to move on and had to go somewhere else.
Now, Trey, I'm going to give you the first crack at it. What is your alternate route scenario?
My first alternate route would be, does Nick Saban ever become the thing in college football? Because if Nick Saban stays in Miami with a healthy Drew Brees, I mean, they had players on that defense. Jason Taylor, a Hall of Fame defensive end, was there. They had a lot of stalwart weapons around them. Jason Taylor, by the way, once told me, even though the Nick Saban era looked terrible, he was the best coach he ever played for. He loved what Nick Saban was doing. In this scenario, Nick Saban, with a quarterback, suddenly is a very competitive NFL head coach. Remember, he was part of Bill Belichick's unbelievable coaching staff when Bill got his first head coaching job with the Cleveland Browns. Had he had the quarterback, the whole idea of the Alabama experience might never have happened. We might not have had the situation that we find ourselves just getting out of with Nick Saban retiring after all those championships and all those wins. The first alternate route for me is that Alabama does not become the thing it became, the second incarnation of Bear Bryant's incredible run there.
I'm with you, man. And I'm going to say something that's probably a little sacrilege in the South, especially the state of Alabama. Oh, Nick Saban eclipsed Bear Bryant. He did. Different competition, different time, different players. He was much better. The whole Alabama thing is wild.
That might completely go away if Drew Brees had been able to pass that physical and be part of what would have been a really interesting NFL team in Miami with Brees as the quarterback and Saban as the head coach. Nick Saban, his very short time in Miami, it was rocky. People forget, there was a time after a game, he said in a press conference, hey, I don't care whether we win or lose. It's, do we do it right? And people were like, dude, what the hell are you talking about, man? The only thing that matters is do you win? And I was doing NFL Live when he did that, and there was so much blowback. Harvey Green, the legendary head of PR for the Miami Dolphins, actually called into the newsroom and got me on the phone, and he was trying to explain to us what I was saying is we need to get the process right, and then the wins will come. And I was like, Nick, that's awesome, and I understand that, but what you can't say to NFL fans is, I don't care whether or not we win. That's the only thing they care about. This whole thing about whether or not it would have worked in Miami becomes completely different. I don't think the whole Alabama experience for Nick Saban ever becomes a thing, and that shatters almost everything we know about college football over the last 15 to 20 years. Look at all the great situations we've seen in the NFL, all right? You want to talk about legendary coach, legendary quarterback.
Always.
Chuck Knoll, Terry Bradshaw, Tom Landry, Roger Staubach, Bill Walsh, Joe Montana, Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, Sean Payton and Drew Brees in a different scenario, which we'll get to. It's those kind of things that make a dynasty work. So the idea of Alabama not becoming the thing because of Nick Saban is absolutely in play.
And it's funny you say that because that's my alternate route, that college football, the landscape would be so different and we would not have a college football playoff. We would still have that lame-ass championship game that we had for so many years where the rankings set up the top two and the top two play.
BCS.
That's right. Yeah, I hated it. And the reason we would have that, Trey, is because there wouldn't be a dominant force in college football like there was with Alabama. Everybody else needed a chance just to get in there and show their ability because Alabama was steamrolling everybody. When you win 8 championships in 17 years, you're winning a lot. And people were like, we got to give other people a chance. If you have a mishmash of people winning each and every year from different conferences and all over, and the AP poll and the BCS still counts, and that makes everything work, then you don't have the college football playoff, which, by the way, now would cheat fans out of what is coming, and that's the big playoff. I think it'll eclipse March Madness in the most watched and the coolest college event of each and every year, because the playoff system is what matters, because you give the little guy a chance to do the big thing. You put the little guy on the field against the big team from the big bad conference, and unless you have Alabama just steamrolling and other teams in the SEC because it's been all SEC party and everybody's sick of it for a long time, then you wouldn't have this playoff that you have now.
I used to always say the BCS had one too many letters in it. It was just BS.
Straight BS. If you remember, Trey, how everybody voted each and every year, it was like the same 5 teams were in the top 5 to begin the season, regardless of who they had on their team.
Just to talk about, as we're taping this podcast, the reports are out there that ESPN and the college football playoff had just come up to a new massive multi-billion-dollar contract to keep this going and expand the playoffs. So we're talking about big dollars that might never be there if this thing went down.
By the way, Trey, hold on. What's it? Where the hell is all that money coming from ESPN? We both work there, and I mean, geez, could we have gotten some of that? You're spending billions?
Apparently, the mouse still has some stuff under the mattress. My second alternate route here is how this would change the landscape, right? We talked at the top of the show. The New England Patriots, I don't think we'll ever see a dynasty like this ever again in football. The 49ers in the 80s and 90s won at least 10 games, 16 straight seasons. In my lifetime, I thought that would never be eclipsed. The Patriots eclipsed it. They won at least 10 games for 17 straight seasons. You mentioned the 17 titles that they won in the AFC East. They won 11 of them consecutively. That's the longest record of all time. The Chiefs currently right behind them with 8 is the second best. We're talking 11 straight AFC East titles. So you put Drew Brees with Nick Saban, with some weapons that they had around them in Miami, and again, a Hall of Fame pass rusher on defense and Nick Saban's propensity for teaching defense, how much does that change that dynamic? How many times now in that situation would Brees and Nick Saban have won the AFC East, thus sending Bill Belichick and Tom Brady somewhere they almost never went, A, the wild card round, and on the road to win those wild card games? I mean, we saw the situation play out this past football season between the Cowboys and the Eagles going back and forth and how much it changed when the Cowboys won the division, which means the Eagles had to go on the road, and they lost to a Tampa Bay team in the postseason that they probably should have won. If we have Saban and Brees together, what does that do to the greatest dynasty in the history of football and arguably the greatest dynasty in the history of sports when you're talking about the complete changing of free agency and all these other pieces being moved differently? We've had different wide receivers. We've had different defensive coordinators. The three things that were always consistent: Robert Kraft owned the team, Bill coached the team, and Tom operated the team. And that's why they had that ability to have that sustained run, because those three pieces were in place and there was no real competition in the division. Well, if you put Nick Saban with Drew Brees, there is no chance in hell, in my opinion, that those runs continue the way they are. And suddenly, the Patriots' ability to have all those home games, to have those division playoff games, to get all those AFC championship games at home, those go out the window, and we may not be looking at a team that wins six championships and is tied with the Pittsburgh Steelers for the most Lombardis in Super Bowl history.
Trey, you just played right into my hands for my other alternate route, and I think you're going to love this one, because think about this. You talk about those pieces that they had in New England, right, that they would put around Tom. Julian Edelman was pretty important to Tom's success, right? Wes Welker, pretty important to the Patriots' success. You take those two pieces away now, because remember, Nick Saban, Kent State alum. He's on that Kent State coaching tree. And now Julian Edelman, quarterback where? Oh, that's right, Kent State. Wes Welker, he's in Miami, so he's there. So all of a sudden, Drew Brees has those two targets right off the bat, plus others, and you've subtracted that from the Patriots situation from Jump Street. They never go there. But Brees has two guys who fit in perfectly with him and can do what Saban wants. And so all of a sudden, that subtraction and addition, it's a game-changing moment.
People forget Wes Welker's career started with the Miami Dolphins, and then he became a thing when he got up to New England. So let me throw another one at you. Not only is the GOAT train disrupted for Brady and Belichick, although without Brady, Belichick's GOAT train has been disrupted over the last few seasons, and that's why he's out of the NFL right now, although I believe he will come back and he'll be fine. Maybe instead of Patrick Mahomes chasing Tom Brady, he's chasing Peyton Manning's numbers. And let me explain. Because in this scenario, as we talked about, suddenly that cakewalk to the AFC East title doesn't exist. It is tooth and nail, and these two teams sort of devour each other over the seasons. Who's the beneficiary of that? Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning and the Colts have very little competition in their division, whether it was the AFC South or, remember, there was a time when they were actually in the AFC East before divisional realignment in 2002. But once they ship out to another division, suddenly it's Brees and Brady fighting each other year in and year out, Saban and Belichick fighting each other year in and year out to get the division crown. Meanwhile, Peyton with Marvin Harrison, Edgerrin James, Reggie Wayne, they're cakewalking. And they get all these home playoff games. And what was the knock against the Colts all those years? Hey, they're great in the RCA Dome and then Lucas Oil Stadium. Put them on the road in Foxborough. They can't win. They got to go outside in the cold and the wet and the rain. They can't win. That never happens. So suddenly Peyton Manning's playing a ton of games at home in what was called a climate-controlled situation. And tick, 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 tick. Like right now, Patrick Mahomes already has more career postseason wins, 15, than Peyton Manning has in his entire Hall of Fame career, 14. Those numbers would shift dramatically over time if suddenly all those games were on Peyton Manning's home turf, where they had the faster team. And remember, they had the defensive ends that were built for speed. Dwight Freeney on one side, Robert Mathis on the other. Those guys were built to play the run rushing to the quarterback, which you can do inside on turf. But when you go outside to Foxborough with somebody else where it gets rainy and cold and snowy and sleety, suddenly that defense cannot tee off the way they can. So it's not just Peyton Manning playing at home on a fast track. It's that defense that Tony Dungy built, which is about light, fast edge rushers, it changes everything. So when this is all said and done, the GOAT chase for Patrick Mahomes might be chasing 18 instead of 12.
That was deep, Trey. I want to stay in college football because I want to talk about the real GOAT of college football right now is Urban Meyer. And Gainesville is the place to be. Florida remains the beast of the SEC. Here's the thing. Urban Meyer wins another championship in 2012, right? So now he's immortal. And more importantly, he signs a long-term, like a 15-year contract that is untouchable even if there is scandal or family issues, whatever you want to call it. But I'm just saying that Urban Meyer remains there. And all that talent, that influx of talent that went to Alabama, they end up in Florida. Remember how sexy it was to be a Gator, right? In the early 2000s, there was nothing better. And the Swamp was the de facto best home field place to play in the country. And so Urban cultivates that. He never goes to Jacksonville and messes up Trevor Lawrence's rookie season, right? I mean, save him from that. But more importantly, it turned Florida into the dynasty that Alabama is and built. And so because of that, Urban stays there, never goes to Ohio State. Things are drastically different for Ohio State. Things are drastically different in the SEC. Georgia never rises into what they are now because Florida never falters because Urban is there and he's able to lock in the talent. And he is now considered the greatest coach in college football history.
I think that's a fantastic point because it was at one point, are you going to Florida or are you going to Alabama? A few years ago was, are you going to Alabama or are you going to Clemson? Or Ohio State. So you think about the players, if Nick Saban doesn't go to Alabama, that Urban Meyer gets. Julio Jones, Derrick Henry, Trent Richardson, even though he was terrible in the NFL. He was an unbelievable college player. All those guys go to the Swamp. It would be like an unbelievable run that, you're right, he would never leave to go to Ohio State.
No.
It would be too big. It would be incredible. And the money would just keep pouring in. And I'm so glad you mentioned Jacksonville, because that was the most embarrassing thing I've ever seen in my life. Urban Meyer, in my opinion, the worst head coach the NFL has ever seen.
The worst?
It's not even a debate. What did he do when he got there? He signed Tim Tebow to a contract to play a different position, tight end, even though he hadn't played football in like 6 years. You don't sign him to a contract. You say, come in for a tryout. We'll see how it works. He signed the guy to a contract.
He's blind to Tim Tebow.
I get it. Then he brings in as his strength coach to Jacksonville the guy from Iowa that had to be fired because of racially insensitive comments he had made to black players. This just in, the NFL is made up of almost 66% African-American players. What are you doing bringing that coach into an NFL locker room? And then the most egregious thing I've ever seen any coach do in any level of football, after a loss, hey, you guys, you get on the plane. I'm going to stay here in town. I'll see you later.
And get photographed with a honey. That's the other thing. Whoa.
Yeah, I have never in my life, Kevin, whether it's JV, high school varsity, college, the NFL say, okay, I'm not going back with the team. It was an unmitigated disaster. And then he allegedly assaulted a kicker, basically pushing him and kicking him, say, I need my kickers to make kicks. Oh, good. Good, Urban. Good fake tough guy. Kick a kicker. It was an unmitigated disaster. And that's why I say he was the worst head coach in the history of the NFL. Okay, so that's pretty wild, right? But give me your craziest off-the-map route if we have this situation with Nick Saban and Drew Brees together staying and becoming a really functional duo in Miami.
If they stay there and I go back to college once again and Alabama doesn't happen, you don't get the worst senator in the Senate right now.
Are you going Tommy Tuberville on me?
I'm going Tommy Tuberville right now because let me just say this about Tommy Tuberville. Decent coach. But when Nick Saban arrived in 2007, right, had a decent season. But the next year, here comes Alabama. Tuberville goes 5-7. And they're like, you know what, Tommy, you got to get gone. So they kick him out. They run him out of Auburn, right? He still goes and he coaches at Texas Tech. And he still goes and he coaches at Cincinnati. Yeah, in Cincinnati. He was 49-39 in those last six seasons. That is very mediocre for a guy who's supposed to be a great coach. Why would you take a mediocre coach and then put him in the Senate? What makes a mediocre coach a good senator? If you can't legislate a football team of 53 men, how are you going to legislate an entire state? But no, here we go. Tommy, come on, let's go. So Alabama, this one's on you. You vote him in.
I get it.
And Tommy's doing his thing. But then Tommy takes it one step too far for me. Tommy was asked, would he condemn white nationalists? And Tommy said, well, what do you consider a white nationalist? And a reporter said to him, and I want to read this. A white nationalist is a person who propagates Nazism and believes black and brown people are not equal to white. Tommy, in his infinite wisdom, came back with this amazing quote. I look at a white nationalist as a Trump Republican. Whoa, distance yourself, y'all. Distance yourself.
Or just say the truth.
Just come out and say it, Tommy. This is a man who was in charge and found so much success from African-American young men for so long who played on his football teams. And now he's in the Senate and he's doing everything he can to try and harm those young African-American men and the heroes out there who are defending our country and women and everybody. He is, if you rank all the senators, he's the worst right now.
So that's your crazy off the map one, and I'm here for it. I like it. Let me do this one. If Nick Saban gets Drew Brees, marijuana is legal in the state of Florida.
How do you get marijuana from Nick Saban?
I mentioned that Jason Taylor once told me that Nick Saban was the best coach he ever had, even though it was a short thing. He believed they were going to turn it around. That was part of Ricky Williams' redemption tour, okay? Ricky is one of the most interesting people, whether you like him or not, in the history of the NFL. I mean, he's a fascinating guy. You know, Mike Ditka traded his entire draft to get Ricky Williams, a running back, by the way. Think about this day and age. You're going to trade all your picks for a running back in the NFL. That'll never happen again, ever, ever, ever. But Ricky was a guy who obviously had other interests outside the NFL, and he's grown on to have this amazing company. It's called the Heisman, H-I-G-H. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. You get where we're going here. He sells his own product. Nick Saban was not beloved by many people in the NFL, but Jason Taylor loved him and Ricky Williams loved him. He said years later that he loved playing for Nick Saban because he set the standard. So let's say Saban stays there and Ricky Williams is beginning his cannabis activism. And by the way, if you do the math and you look at the science, a lot of the cannabis stuff can really help NFL players deal with their injuries. Megatron recently said the only way he could get through the season because you're so beaten up and battered. And we're talking about Megatron, Calvin Johnson, I mean, a physical specimen of wide receiver, he needed cannabis to help him get through those final few seasons. So if Saban stays, he embraces Ricky Williams because Saban does take care of his players. He really does, especially the really good ones. He knows the players he can take care of and the players he can't take care of. He helps Ricky Williams set the movement. Williams becomes a success story for using the then. It is wild now to think how controversial weed was in the mid-2000s and how it's just not a thing almost everywhere in this country anymore. Florida's attitude towards marijuana changes, and Ricky Williams, with the help of Nick Saban, becomes a folk hero in the state of Florida and in the city of Miami, and a Ricky Williams Day becomes a thing, and that helps marijuana become legalized in the state of Florida.
Whoa. So we're having Ricky Williams Day now.
We're having Ricky Williams Day because of Nick Saban embracing Ricky Williams' ability to run the rock, which was still at a very high level, and what he needed to do. Nick's no dummy. What do I need to do to get the best out of my best players? If that's the case, Ricky, I'm here for you. Win, lose, or tie. Suddenly the tide turns, ironic I use that word, towards Ricky Williams in Florida. Florida sees things differently, please, maybe for once. And we get a legalized cannabis system in the state of Florida, and we have a Ricky Williams Day, all because Drew Brees passes the physical and Nick Saban and Drew Brees become a thing.
If you look at Ricky Williams and you put him in that position where he succeeds and he has a coach like Nick Saban behind him, okay, I can see where you're going. I understand the reach. And nothing changes public opinion more than sports figures. Sports leads the way, whether it's breaking the color barrier or free agency and how it affects the job market. Sports changes the world. So, okay, Trey, I'm going to rock with you on that. Coming up, the biggest winners and losers from Drew's failed physical and Oprah. I'm delving back into my world, but I have to throw it out there.
Do it. That's the butterfly effect for real.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Welcome back. We just unpacked all the alternate realities if the Saints never got their Hall of Fame quarterback. And now we're going back to the real world. Trey, who are the big winners from Drew Brees never signing in Miami?
This is the biggest no-brainer of all time, but obviously it's the city of New Orleans. The city had just been rocked in 2005 by Hurricane Katrina. There was devastation all over the city. I was actually in New Orleans 3 days before Hurricane Katrina hit. I was down there doing an appearance for Bud Light. We were all monitoring the weather and was like, okay, we need to get out of here. So we left, and 3 days later, the hurricane hits. And I'll never forget to this day, the convention center where I was shucking beer for Bud Light is where they were wheeling in bodies because they had nowhere else to keep them. Going back to New Orleans after Katrina, just to see how the city would rebuild and regroup, and a huge part of that, I mean, a massive part of that, was the Sean Payton, Drew Brees experience. You know, the Monday night game there where Steve Gleason had the blocked punt that led to the touchdown against the Atlanta Falcons. That first Monday night game back in New Orleans was remarkable.
Look out! Right through! A pick up by Steve Gleason! It is scooped and scored by Curtis Deloach! Touchdown, New Orleans!
Drew Brees and Sean Payton together revitalized the Crescent City that had just been devastated. And I just can't imagine that alternate reality where that wouldn't have taken place. So clearly the city of New Orleans, the party with Lombardi, we once joked after he won the Super Bowl that if you walked behind Drew Brees through the city of New Orleans, you could commit a crime and no one would care because Drew Brees was in front of you. So to me, by far the biggest winner in all of this was the Saints, the whole Bayou area, the city of New Orleans. That to me, off the charts, the biggest winner because of the failed physical.
Being in New Orleans right after Katrina and seeing the devastation and how hard it was for that city to pick itself up and what Drew and the Saints meant to that city, even when that year right after Katrina, when they went to the NFC Championship, that was a moment that lifted that city. So I'm with you on that one. The city needed those guys.
Well, what about you? What's your biggest winner?
Trey, my biggest winner is Dr. James Andrews. Now, look, we know that he is the orthopedic surgeon as far as professional sports is concerned. He's the guy. He's the go-to guy, and you believe him. And for some reason, the Dolphins didn't believe that that shoulder that he surgically repaired for Drew Brees would hold up. Now, Nick Saban has said on more than one occasion that he flew down to talk to Dr. James Andrews to check on that shoulder, and Dr. Andrews said it would be okay. The Dolphins doctors, who Nick Saban said didn't know a damn thing, said it wouldn't hold up. It held up for 13 seasons really good. It held up for a Hall of Fame career. You don't doubt the person who is the preeminent person in his field, because guys travel from all around the world to get fixed by that guy down in Alabama.
Obviously, the other big winner here is the Patriots and Brady and Belichick. It's hard for me to imagine that consistent run of success would have been there if we'd had the coach and quarterback pairing that we're talking about in Nick Saban and Drew Brees. It's not taking anything away from all the accomplishments of the Patriots. They occasionally lost a game in Miami, but suddenly those losses would be so much more significant because they might have division titles attached to them. They might have a playoff spot attached to them. You cannot overstate how little competition from the Jets and the Dolphins and the Bills in that decade and a half that the Patriots had to endure. There was nothing in their way. Drew Brees not being there kept that going. So all that stuff and all that hardware and all those Super Bowls, and all, by the way, the complex up at the stadium in Foxborough. I mean, there are movie theaters there. There are restaurants there. There are shops. All of that potentially goes away. All those dollars for Robert Kraft potentially go away if Drew Brees is there with Nick Saban in Miami. The Patriots, Brady and Belichick, benefited massively. All right, Kevin, if they're winners, we always have losers. Who are the biggest losers in the way this actually played out to you?
First, I'm going to start with San Antonio. The city of San Antonio, I think, felt they had a chance to actually get this team. They thought that the Saints would move to San Antonio. And I do believe that San Antonio is the best city without a professional football team. The Alamo Dome is a great venue and it would have worked perfectly for them. But Tom Benson did a dance, but then his heart remained in New Orleans. So I think that San Antonio, they toyed with them and then took away their ultimate prize.
The biggest loser to me in this is the rest of the NFC South. The Falcons, the Bucks, and the Panthers. If he had gone to Miami, suddenly, like the last couple of years, the NFC South would be up for anybody with a winning record of one game over 500, a couple of games under 500. Obviously, the rest of the NFC South, big, big losers with Drew Brees and Sean Payton being the force that they've been in that division. And there weren't just winners and losers because Drew Brees ended up with the Saints instead of the Dolphins. There were a series of awkward moments that we might never have witnessed. For example, Deflategate, because if that isn't a home game for the Patriots, guess what? They're not in charge of the inflation of the footballs. And again, the NFL sort of messed this up because, you know, science and air pressure and all this kind of stuff. But all of that goes away because the home team is responsible for the pressure of the balls. Although I got to say, my favorite line about all that, when Tom Brady had that sheepish grin on his face trying to explain the press conference, he's like, you know, I don't know the difference between 10.5 and 13.5, but 12.5 PSI feels like magic in my hands. I'm like, you just told on yourself, bro. Like, wait a minute. You can't tell me that you can't tell the difference between 10.5 and 13.5, but then you say 12.5 feels perfect in your hand. Well, how do you know that unless you know what the pressure of the football is in? I'm not saying it had anything to do with the game. Patriot fans, stand down. Put away your muskets and your three-corner hats. Okay, we get it. But let's just be honest about the conversation. The only reason he knows what 12.5 PSI feels like is because he doesn't like the other PSIs in the football.
100%. Let's be honest. He told on himself. So this one breaks my heart. It tears a little part of my soul away to talk about it, but it's okay. I have to mention this. When I mention Oprah Winfrey, I'm talking about one of the greatest broadcasters in television history. She's an amazing actress. She's an incredible philanthropist. She is a giving and loving soul. But I think even Oprah will laugh about this. And it was the time that Drew Brees was on her show and she went to wipe the birthmark off his face.
All right, who just kissed you? There's a big old kiss right there.
That's not coming off.
That little thing you have on your face, that's not coming off. But let me just say this. You're talking about a Hall of Famer, one of the greatest ever in the history of broadcast television, and a woman I adore and love. A little part of my soul just died by saying that.
So we've answered a lot of questions about Brees possibly going to Miami, but some remain. Kevin, what are some of the questions we still can't answer as we take a look at what didn't happen?
Well, first of all, did Miami fire those doctors? Because here's the thing that I don't understand. If your coach says, I want this guy and he's okay and I'll take a chance on him, then you let him come. To this day, I don't understand this moment. And I don't think Drew even understands it because he thought he was going to be in South Beach.
I guess my biggest unanswered question is, how would we look at Sean Payton if this hadn't happened? And I know Sean. Sean's a friend of mine. The relationship between Sean and Drew was symbiotic. I mean, they were of like mind. They got it. They understood the game together. And that's why they had a lot of that success. Well, what happens? Like, we've seen what's happened with Sean Payton and Russell Wilson after a couple of years away. That's not going to work. So he's going to try and get another quarterback in there to get it going in Denver.
Who would that quarterback have been?
Maybe Vince Young?
Does that work?
I don't think so. And I got a great Vince Young story. We were interviewing Vince. You know, everybody before the draft, they come up and they do these, we call them car wash interviews. They go around to all the shows and do all this kind of stuff. They come up to Bristol. And I was interviewing Vince actually on a satellite. And I told Vince in the interview, I said, one of the knocks against you is coming out of Texas. You were in shotgun basically 95% of the time. You're going to have to be under center a little more in the NFL. What do you say to people when they ask you about that? And Vince's response was, well, it's basically the same. And I stood there with this look on my face like, really? In fact, it couldn't be more different. And that's when I had concerns about VY in the NFL, because the last thing you want your quarterback to not understand is you don't know what you don't know. So I can't say with any great certainty if Vince Young had gone there and been the quarterback that Sean Payton was working with, he would have had the exact same success. So that's the great unknown for me.
And Trey, here's the thing that I think we've all discovered about Sean Payton, that he didn't handle the Russell Wilson situation well at all. It sucked the way he treated Russell Wilson, and it sucked the way that it turned out. And if he could have had a little more grace and dignity in this and been a little bit more of a diplomat. And instead, he was a brute force and said and did some things that sucked. And I wonder if it was another quarterback besides Drew Brees, could he have handled it, or would we have seen this iteration of Sean Payton?
That's the thing that we're going to have to find out going forward as we see another quarterback more than likely be the guy that he's working with in Denver in the next upcoming NFL season.
Well, you better get his guy this time.
Russell was not his guy. There's no question about that. Find your guy and see if we can make it work again. All right, that's it. Back to life, back to reality. If you're listening or watching on YouTube, let us know what we've missed. I'm at Wingos on X, and he is at Kevin Frazier.
And send us all the biggest, wildest, most agonizing sports what if questions that you'd like us to cover on the show, and we'll throw them in the alternate routes machine for maybe a future episode.
That's it for us. Thanks for being with us, and we'll see you down the road on alternate routes.
That's the butterfly effect. Yeah, nothing left to say. I gotta make it happen. What you about to see next is a chain reaction. Shoulda, coulda, wouldas, never see the action. Just keep it real. It's like butterfly effect for real.
Follow Alternate Routes on the Wondery app, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to every episode of Alternate Routes early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.